Jesus Christ, it's Jason Bourne, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Bourne Identity Week on Here We Read the Book. I'm Adam Heap.
I'm Sally McMaster.
And Lois isn't here. She's been killed.
Yeah.
In action.
Yeah.
Rest in peace. No, Lois is just on Christmas holiday, so it's just the two of us today talking about cool spies. And so the question of the week, what is your code name?
I would be Sally the Operator.
The Operator. So, yeah, so the ones that they give in this movie are... So bleach blonde hair dude, who is Castell.
Mm.
And then, Clive Owen's character is called the Professor. And
that's the best one.
Yeah, by far. And then the last one is Mannheim. Yeah. I always like them when they're like the something.
Yeah. I don't know if they even tell us what Bourne's is.
Like, yeah, like.
Does he get a code name
in the
movie?
He has one in the,
he has one in the book.
In the book, he's called Kane.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Is he like the, well, and they're all the same like rank, I guess, aren't
yeah,
they? Because that's what Clive Owen's character says, you know.
They're all the Treadstone.
And they're based in
elite.
Cities.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if he has one or not. Do you ever find
really
out in
us.
Any of the other movies?
I don't think so. I don't think they really go into that very much.
I think I would be the Collector.
Yes.
Because it's got like both a cool like pop culture meaning for like who I, like who I personally like what I like to do, and then. Also, but it's also like I collect, you know, kill counts.
Yeah, I would be the operator because I work in a call center and it makes me feel a little bit cooler than just
call
center desk hopper. Yeah,
and that's like long
and
hard
even
to pronounce.
Though it's not the same meaning of the word operator, I could say that I strike with surgical precision, even though you don't call surgeons operators,
no,
but I will.
But, yeah, it's all relative. Yeah. I think as well, I think if we become secret agents, you have to have it, we get free flip phones as
yes.
part of the deal as well.
Yes. Ah, that takes me back. I had a flip phone in year 12.
I think you can definitely date this movie based on flip phones and Castell's hairstyle.
Yeah, and a lot of the... computers, the monitors are humongous in a depth way, not in a
it's like yeah. that like that's all stuff will appear in like museums now. Like you look at the old Apple Mac computers and like the giant bodied monitors and everything
big
like
box.
That. And these days it's all just nice and compact.
Yeah. Although I think also as a government agency, they're probably not always going to be at the, even though they're the CIA, I feel like government agencies still can be pretty behind the times.
Yeah. Well, like my workplace, we're still using like Microsoft Office 2002. Like,
right.
They're so backwards. It's just like they can't, cause, and I understand it is a big deal to update your entire system.
A lot of licenses involved. So.
Yeah. but it's like, it's really funny. You think about the end of the film where Conklin's like, Mindy, pack it all down and everything. And she's like, okay, I'll get the truck.
Yeah.
It's like these days, like the CIA, if you're like, your safe house, like, pack it down. They're like, cool, fold laptop, take laptop away.
Bye.
Done. Yeah, no, that's,
very interesting.
A fun piece of dated.
Yeah.
technology. So we're discussing the Bourne Identity this week.
Yeah, we should probably said that.
Well, we did it. Like, I think it's when you said, we just said at the top of the thing.
I guess.
And that, like, that quote doesn't come from this film, but it's, like,
no.
iconic because of Vine. Thanks, Vine.
Okay.
So let's take a vote on what we preferred, the 1980 Robert Ludlum novel, The Bourne Identity, or the 2002 Doug Liman film with the same name.
Film, definitely.
Yep. I don't think the book was, like, terrible.
It was just a product of its time.
Yeah.
And I didn't really enjoy it that much, so...
Yeah, because this is probably really only the second, like, action book that we've done after Die Hard.
Right.
And I encountered a lot of the same sort of issues, like, reading... like, there's definitely a space for action books. Like, I think, like, I've got a ton of Matthew Riley books in my bookshelf, and he is a very, very entertaining writer.
Yeah, but he gets to the point.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
and I think,
really quickly.
And a lot of people, like, I guess if... book critics would probably like target that and be like, oh, it's simplified and over the top and stuff. But there, I think it's just a different style of action thing. Like this is probably more of a thriller,
yeah,
suspense action thing. That's just, it's not really my favorite genre to read.
My problem wasn't so much with the pacing, although I did find it picked up a bit after, like sort of halfway through, I really started getting more into it, but more just the attitudes of the characters and just the dialogue. Like, the dialogue did not sound like how people talk. Like, when they were talking to each other, I'm like, no one speaks this way. So it really dampened my engagement. Like, I couldn't really suspend my disbelief for all the actual things that I needed to suspend it for and, like, to get into it and engage with it. Like, I would be taken straight out again because someone said something, like, in a really weird way. So even, like, at first I was like, maybe people in 1980 spoke this way, but they didn't. No. So, yeah, it was just...
Someone mentioned as I was doing my research that, like, they actually had given up by, like, because reading the original, because this was a trilogy of books as well. And there's, like, 15 of them now. Like, yeah. It's massive.
Yeah, the three
Even
by...
Even though he's dead, they're still writing
Yeah,
them.
Three by Ludlum, and then all the ones after that were by someone else.
But someone was saying, like, about the third one that, like, the writing became a little just strange and hard to follow. Because at one point, like, apparently police around his house, and they're, like, with sirens going and everything, and they're like, we've surprised you. I'm like,
dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't read them that far, but writing might have been an issue further on. So we definitely both preferred the film then. Is it a good adaptation? This is a weird one to answer because Doug Liman himself has basically admitted, he said, yeah, I pretty much gutted the whole thing except for the amnesia.
Yeah, pretty much.
Starting point.
The starting point of man wakes up with a certain set of skills, but amnesia. And then apart from just using some of the names, and some of those names don't even relate to the same things, it's a completely different story.
Yeah.
So I guess it depends what you're defining an adaptation by. Is it just by taking the core concept, which I guess is a man wakes up with amnesia?
Does
or
it then...
do you need to have at least some of the other parts?
I mean, for me, I guess the guideline is you take that, if you take that core concept and then did you make a good, like, action film out of that concept, then yeah, like, this is a good, like, using that core thing, man wakes up with amnesia and a certain set of skills, and then that, yeah, they definitely do go on to create a good action product based off of that here. But is it
The Bourne Identity, or is it just another action film with the same name?
Yeah, and I think the second of those is probably true, but I think a lot of people would probably prefer the film.
Oh, like, no, like it's definitely, like... The franchise definitely does not suffer for it because I personally found the film a lot more interesting than the book. The film does take away a layer of complexity, I think, in terms of like the sort of the twists of the book. But I think...
And you think that's for pacing as well?
I think so, but I think it's just also to make it simpler for a film audience because you don't have the time. But... I think it's just you didn't need all the other layers, to be honest. So,
yeah,
so I'd say it's a good adaptation if it's literally take that concept and turn it into a good movie. But I don't know if someone who's a fan of the book would see it the same way. Because I think they would say, well, they didn't actually use anything apart from that first chapter as a springboard. So.
Yeah. So a plot summary for those of you who aren't familiar with Jason Bourne. After being saved from near death, Jason Bourne awakes with retrograde amnesia and incredible survival skills. And he doesn't remember his own name, but we have to use it for simplicity's sake. As he journeys to discover his true identity with help from German student Marie, he must evade and take down CIA program Treadstone, who are attempting to kill him.
Yeah, so that's the plot for the movie.
Yes.
But the plot for the book is a little bit more...
It is wildly different.
Yeah, topsy-turvy. Do you want me to have a
crack
at it?
Yeah, go through
I'll
it.
I'll try
and
remember. So Jason Bourne wakes up with a certain set of skills and retrograde amnesia. He then, through a series of events, finds out that he is a cold, deadly assassin attributed to, you know, hundreds of assassinations and all-around bad guy. He's sort of competing with another assassin called Carlos the Jackal.
Yeah. Is it Castro is the code name for him or something?
I think they just called him... Oh, I can't remember. But apparently that was based on an actual assassin.
Yeah, it is. So at the beginning of the book, there's actually like excerpts from an article, like a real-life article about this this guy called Castro.
I guess if you're going to try and link it to base it in reality, I suppose. Anyway, so he's very upset about being this awful person, but then we find out later that the assassin persona, who they name Kane, is actually an American attempt to draw out Carlos the Jackal to capture him. So he's actually working as a undercover.
By like trying to rival kill count stuff.
Yeah,
right?
So he's actually working undercover as an assassin, although he probably could be an assassin because he's very skilled. And it all links back to a paramilitary operation that he used to be in Vietnam called Medusa.
And Treadstone's in that as like Operation Treadstone is this like CIA thing.
Yeah, so there only a handful of people knew because there were worries of a leak in the American government. Because Jason doesn't know who he is, he doesn't know he's actually a double agent, and the American government don't know that he doesn't know that, and so they think maybe he's gone rogue or he's just like had a complete mental breakdown, so they end up trying to kill him to sort of salvage the operation or to...
And,
because he knows so much.
And Castro's after him as well still.
Yeah, of course, because of his vendetta against him.
Yeah.
Yeah, very interesting. Like, the movie does also have a bit of that, like, this, they think that this agent's gone rogue and so they send people to kill him, but it's missing that second layer of dramatic irony.
Yeah, there's really only the one, like, enemy for Bourne in this, I guess, other than like, where's the book has, you know, time as well to go into more layers.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the cast of this film. Matt Damon is Jason Bourne. Now, before we talk about Matt Damon, let's talk about who this could have been, which is always a fun little experiment. Yeah. Brad Pitt was offered the role and turned it down to play Spy Game.
I've seen Spy Games. I thought it was a good movie. It had Robert Redford and Brad Pitt. But, yeah, it's interesting.
What could have been?
Exactly. Like...
Now, this is the film that launched like Matt Damon into like, superstar.
Yeah, really. Like you know it's based on a trilogy of books. I mean, I don't know what the contracts would be, if it would be like, we're signing you for three from the top, or if it's just...
Usually like they tend to
we'll
go
sign
one,
up for one,
one
and
then
see
then
what happens.
With like caveats that if this film does well, we'd
like
you back for more.
Like, I don't know, maybe he really wanted to work with Robert Redford or something.
Yeah, also possible.
It did not make as much money as The Bourne Identity
yeah,
did.
Yeah, but it also didn't, like, clearly Brad Pitt's career did not suffer because he wasn't in this film.
Yeah.
I
think he would have made a fine Jason Bourne.
But some of the other alternatives for this, and some of these really make you think, like, this would have been a different movie. Russell Crowe, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Tom Cruise, and Sylvester Stallone.
Wow.
Like, of all those five, like, only Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise, I think, this film looks somewhat the same.
Yeah.
I think Russell Crowe, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, all much older.
Yeah.
Much older. Like, Matt Damon's
tiny in
this. I mean,
I think Tom Cruise is probably in their age, but he doesn't look
doesn't
like
look
it.
Doesn't look it, no. But, like, Schwarzenegger, like, this is a wildly different film with Schwarzenegger as this
role.
Yeah.
I suppose he'd already done some spy movies.
Oh.
So,
look, he's an action...
Yeah.
Movie superstar, there's no doubt about it, but it's just like his physical appearance, like,
I mean,
it becomes
yeah.
a very different film.
Definitely. I think because, I mean, they don't go into it into the film as much, but in the books they're always talking about what a chameleon Jason Bourne is, like, able to blend into the crowd and, like, become whoever
Arnold
he wants to be.
Arnold Schwarzenegger, I would never associate with the phrase blend into the crowd.
Exactly. So, yeah, it would just be, we're looking for... someone who could kill you. Be on the lookout. Oh, there he is.
Yeah, look at that guy. Super tall.
Yeah, tall and buff.
Yeah, but Matt Damon. Let's actually talk about him in this role. Like, what do you think of his voice?
I really like him. It was interesting rewatching this film because I really like this franchise of films. I like all of the movies, some more than others, but I've got a bit of a special place in my heart for it. I find them very easy to watch. they're not like super complex, but they do have a little bit of that cerebral, like, sort of, you know, it does make you think a bit, and they do concentrate on the character as well as the all the action and car chase and stuff. So I really enjoy it, and it was interesting watching this again with Matt Damon from 2001, because he's so baby faced. Like, I know he'd been in a few things before that, even younger, but I'm so used to him as the big action star already.
Yeah, I feel like I've given him short shrift for quite a lot of his career, actually. Like, I've never been a massive fan of his, but, like, you see performances like this, like, really early on. He really does capture a lot of the nuance of this.
Yeah, I think he does a really good job. And, you know, obviously put in the physical effort to, he did a lot of his own stunts and trained to, you know, look like he could be a secret agent.
Because his face is so baby-faced.
He's got such a baby face, but he is ripped, so... Mm.
Yeah, no, I think he's a good choice. Franka Potente as Marie Kreutz.
Yeah, she was good. Yeah. In the book, Marie is a Canadian professor.
It's funny, like, a lot of films tend to veer, like, I'm thinking of Now You See Me, where, you know, like, your protagonist, the white male, like, cop character, has, you know, French or European language speaking.
I think it was a good choice to have her as a European woman instead of just someone who happened to be in Europe at the time. I don't know. There was much point in that.
Yeah, they redo her circumstances here. So she's like a student trying to get a visa and everything.
Yeah, and she's, they call her a gypsy. I don't know if they mean she's actually Romani, or if they're just, like, using it as a slur.
Wikipedia said that the character's German.
Yeah.
So.
Well, she could be. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I think she does a great job. I like her characterization in the movie a lot more than in the book. In the book, again, like, mostly from the dialogue, she just doesn't speak like a person does in the book.
And they play these characters very, very differently. You know, like Marie here, you know, like, wants to work with him straight right from the off.
Yeah.
When he offers her the money, whereas, like, she's a hostage.
Like, that's one of the main reasons I didn't really enjoy the book, because, like, even before he learns that he's supposed to be a super bad guy and then has his, like, crisis of identity, he's a shithead. Like, he takes her hostage and threatens to kill her and, like, slaps her in the face, and it really does not make for a sympathetic protagonist. So I did not, like,
no, they try to excuse it through that. The like, oh, it's all about this character's, like, oh, he didn't care what he did, it was all practical, you know.
Yeah, like, I mean, I don't care about that though, because he's being such a jerk. Like, it doesn't make up for it afterwards. Also, they should probably put a content warning here for sexual assault, because the Marie in the book gets, when she's caught up in his predicament, she gets taken away to be killed, and he, you know, decides to be a good person and goes to rescue her and finds her being raped. And I don't like when that's used as a plot device
for a dude to be a hero.
And then she turns around, like, a couple of days later and is like, oh, I'm in love with you now, let's have sex. And look, I'm sure there are women who in the aftermath of a rape will have sex, that's fine, but it just seems like such a male fantasy of my magical healing cock, like, now heals you of all wounds, and now you love me. And I was not here for it, and it really put me off a lot of the book at the start. Her character in the book, like, they do a lot of tell, not show as well. Like, we know she's a methodical, cold sort of person because she says so, instead of doing things. I mean, she does have, her expertise does come into play later on, because they have a big, like, bank heist type side plot, but you know, getting rid of that and just making her a you know, innocent bystander who's kind of along for the ride but gets sort of pulled into the sphere and who doesn't get, like, slapped in the face by Jason Bourne, I think is a good change.
Yeah, not a great, especially, like, if you saw that on screen, it's even more visceral, I think. So I think it's a good direction that they go in with this character for the film. We got Chris Cooper as Alexander Conklin, the head of the Treadstone operation.
Yeah, he's good.
Gruff white dude. Yeah, gruff old white dude who's in charge of CIA things, not hard to play.
He plays a lot of these types of roles of, like, the man in authority or the military man or, you know.
Yeah, I wonder, is that this kind of guy? Is he also in Now You See Me?
Is he? I don't know.
If not, there's a dude who's very like him. I don't know, like, why I'm thinking of. These two films do not have a lot in common, but. No, it's David Warshawski.
Okay. Never mind.
But, like.
Same sort of guy.
Similar role, right?
Yeah.
They could have played either of them.
Yeah, I like Chris Cooper. Like, he has, you know, a couple of things that he gets cast to do, and he's always really good when he does it. He's sort of the kind of guy stuck in the middle of being involved in Treadstone and also having to justify its existence to the rest of the CIA.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think he plays that well. And his sort of ongoing desperation kind of sinks into things very well, I think.
Yeah. Then we've got Brian Cox as Ward Abbott, who's like a deputy director of the CIA.
Yeah, he's
and like kind of overseeing
Chris Cooper's boss.
Character. Yeah.
So, I don't think he's directly involved in Treadstone anymore or, like, doesn't see the sort of day-to-day things. Although he was involved at the beginning.
Yeah.
He's the one who's like, so we heard about this assassination attempt. Was this us? Which is what you want from a government agency.
Yeah, you got to wonder about the CIA, like how much, like, it must be so, like, did we do that? Was that us?
Was that us? I think he's pretty good. His character has a bit more to do in the second movie, but as a sort of, you know, the guy who's asking the questions of Chris Cooper. I think he does a good job.
Yeah. There's a couple of assassins. The only one really of any notable name is Clive Owen, who plays the professor.
Yeah.
And I liked seeing him in this film.
He didn't say much, but.
No, because he was dying at the time. Yeah. Spoilers.
He is definitely, I think, he's quite a menacing figure. Like, we first see him when he's called up, like, tutoring some child, it looks like.
Yeah.
And then he's just, like, looks at his phone, like, closes his phone.
Have to kill someone.
You know, and there is a bit later on where Julia Stiles' character is gonna pass him an assignment, and the camera does one of those things where it shows her in the frame with nothing behind her. Like, there's a bit of a rotation around her as she looks at something else, and then it pans back and he's standing there where he wasn't before. It's just, it's so dramatic.
He's so good at his job, it's scary.
Yeah, it's one of those, it made me laugh.
Yeah, no, he's good. That's pretty much all the cast. Let's talk about the plot, shall we? Now, as we've mentioned, like, these plots diverge wildly, so we're going to be mainly discussing the film and we'll try and bring the book in. Where there's big similarities or differences.
Yep.
So we open with probably the biggest similarity of the whole thing, which is that Bourne is saved at sea by a fishing vessel and has amnesia. So he's kind of
riddled with bullet holes.
Yeah.
And they're like, what happened?
Yeah, and this is slightly different. So, like, there's just the two bullet wounds in his back in the film.
Mm.
And he's, like, on the verge of death in the book.
Like, he spends, like, 6 months recovering in the book, which you don't really have time for.
Exactly, yeah. It's all expediency here, that the ship's captain also happens to be reasonable with a knife.
Yeah. It's interesting because in the book he's under the care of this drunkard doctor who, again, doesn't speak like anyone speaks, but also has decided very early on, oh, there's something weird about you, like, and I know, you know, your psychology is completely different, and think of the, you know, I don't know, he just, It was just the first of many.
Yeah, like just weird suspension of disbelief niggling, moments.
Like, yeah. Why is someone who's like a stranger now just like making all of these armchair psychology like analysis of this person?
Yeah. So he has a couple of things. He has a couple of languages that he can speak. Yeah. He obviously doesn't remember who he is, but he does have like advanced combat training.
Mm-hmm.
This comes into like effect at different points, like where he just ends up fighting with people on boats. Yeah,
sort of in muscle memory and just sort of happens.
Yep. And he's also got a metal shell that was embedded in his hip.
Yeah.
Which has bank details for an account in Zurich.
In the book, it's like a microfiche, like, negative. But yeah. It was 1980, so...
Yeah, exactly.
I like how they've brought it into
the modernizing 21st it really helps, yeah.
It helps with a spy thriller.
This is not like, the first adaptation of The Bourne Identity. No. There was a late 80s one as well, I believe, but I've...
Be interested. I'm not familiar with that. Yeah, be interesting to see.
Apparently, who's much closer to the book.
Okay.
But so this leads Bourne. We're just gonna keep calling him Bourne because we have to.
Yeah.
To Zurich. Although I do find it funny, by the way, though, that in the book spends so long, it's like the man Washburn's patient.
Fuck off!
It's just like, please give us the name earlier. Just it's give so us annoying.
Yeah.
So he goes to Zurich into this fancy bank. And opens this box that is for been kept under his name or his bank account number, and then opens it up to find a lot of money and a couple of passports and a handgun.
Yeah, and some like contact lenses and stuff, like anything a good spy would need.
Were they in the film? Whatever. Yeah, because there's like a bunch of equipment. It's like just basic sort of things.
Spy shit.
Yeah. And he just, like, empties everything into his, like, little red duffel bag.
Except for the gun. Yeah. What does that mean? Asks the Americans later.
I did find those scenes were very funny in the film. They're like, oh, well, he did this. Well, it's a signal. What is it? Is he thinking this? Is he thinking... They're, like, so overanalyzing. It's just like, no, this guy just has no idea who he is. But they don't know that. I mean, they don't know he has amnesia. And we start to diverge here in terms of, like, plot straight away because he pretty much leaves. Is like, under suspicion... in the film, because he's as soon as he leaves the bank operator calls the Treadstone operation, who are looking for him. Whereas in the book, he's they launched it right away. Like as soon as he takes out that much money, they're on him, and he's like attacked in the lobby.
Yeah, it's very interesting, but I think it's good. In the movie, because it sort of builds the tension.
Yeah, and which is funny that, like, I mean, and like, you have to build the tension at some point, but it is interesting that they go for tension earlier on here in the movie, which is more fast-paced than the book. Than the book does.
Yeah, well, the book, like, he does a lot of fucking around. Like, he has to go and, like, he buys a passport, although he does use some of his, like, secret skills in order to get money. And
the pacing's very slow in the early going of the
book. Just like, just get to Zurich and go to the bank. Just do it. I think it's fine.
Yeah.
And so he leaves the bank and, oh my God, he's a chameleon secret agent because he looks so suspicious. All the time.
Yeah, like, I'm like, how do you not know it's him? He's like always looking over his shoulder.
Yeah, for someone who's supposed to, like, naturally, even if he doesn't remember, supposed to just, like, automatically do all this spy stuff, he does a lot of shifty, like, looking at police and then looking away really quickly and, like...
Yeah, like, of course they're going to chase you, like, dumbass.
Even if, this is before there's a manhunt or anything where they have this picture and, like... are actually looking for him. He's just like walking along the street and then he sees some cops and he stops and then he's like, and then he like crosses the street and like any cop is going to be like, what's this guy doing? Who?
He just left a bank with the shifty eyes.
Like, what's he doing? Why is he looking so suspicious? Of course they're going to start like chasing him.
Yeah, and he's carrying a duffel bag. Like that's a big suspicious symbol.
Yeah. So he goes into
This was actually one of the moments I thought I preferred the book character Whereas, like, yeah. it would be more natural for you if you are this, like, trained, highly trained assassin that,
yeah.
and the book described, like, details this element of his character quite well.
Yeah.
You know, that everything he does, he's like, it's all muscle memory, but he just does it, or like purely on instinct. Yeah. Like, he doesn't look back. There's certain, like, just little mannerisms he has that.
Yeah, like he'll change his walk, or he'll put a different coat on, or, you know, he wears some different clothing, and he's like, right, what does this character do for a living? This is how it affects his walk, and, like, he becomes that person.
Yeah, whereas Matt Damon is, like, clumsy for a spy.
Yeah. Anyway, he escapes the Swiss police by going to the American embassy with one of his many passports. It's like, I'm an American citizen, let me in.
Yeah, and he's using the name, he's using the American passport name, which is Jason Bourne. Yeah. So this is the identity that he assumes. And it's, at this point, the Treadstone operations, they've already started getting in contact with their agents.
Yeah.
So they contact three of them who are like, and you see they're operating, like.
Mobilized.
Yeah, you get a little, one of my favorite movie tropes was that, which is the map overlay, like panning across the screen, kind of like semi-opaque.
Yeah. One of them was called the Chimp. I want to know who the Chimp is.
Yeah. Yeah, as they're scanning through the list of agents. No, but so they activate, three agents who are, as we mentioned, I think it's, Mannheim, the Professor, and,
Castell?
Castell. Yeah.
So they're all in different parts of Europe, and they're put on, you know.
Yeah, they activate their flip phones and get their assignments. We get a lot of in the film. You go straight into the viewpoint of Conklin and his situation.
Yeah, I like that. I think it's makes it a lot easier to follow.
Yeah,
and like because in the book you don't even find out that he's a double agent for like ages, so you just. Yeah, and with the modernization, it means that it's a bit more believable that they're like, oh, we've just seen he's entered the embassy because he's, you know, scanned his passport or whatever. So they're like, oh, there he is, and they can
track
sort
him.
Of, yeah, it shows a bit more of that kind of globalization.
Yeah, I don't think it works as well in the movie if you, like, follow Jason Bourne the whole time like you do in the book and then, oh, they're just on him. Why? How did they get the information? Yeah. You're like... In a movie, you need to convey it quickly and, like, just not have any doubt lingering over it, I guess.
Yeah. So he does some more... Oh, this is where he overhears Marie in the embassy because she's trying to get a student visa organized, or she's, like, she's got, like, a whole heap of, like, papers. She's like, I was speaking to someone here last week. Where's that guy? It's just one of those, like...
It's like any Australian paper. With Centrelink.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's just that classic, like...
Bureaucratic.
I've gone into the bank. There's all this red tape. I'm trying to get... So you... I don't know. It's a good way to get us sympathising with her pretty quickly.
Yep.
Because she, you know, as she yells out very loudly, like, I don't have any money. I don't have a place to live because I got kicked out of my apartment. We're, you know, setting up for Bourne approaching her later.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you could tell they singled her out.
Yeah.
And this is a different character, like we've mentioned earlier. This is this Canadian, is it Jean-Marie?
Marie Saint-Jean.
Marie Saint-Jean.
Saint-Jacques.
Yes. So still French-sounding name.
Yeah.
We didn't mention as well, Conklin, as we cut to him, he's under pressure from his own superiors, like we've talked about in the character.
Yeah, so we haven't actually introduced the assassination.
Which is literally the first, one of the first scenes in the film, is about this director, this exiled African dictator called Wombosi, who, the opening of the movie talks about his exile and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so he's a bad guy who's going to write a tell-all book about the CIA and name names. And there was an assassination attempt, and he's been, you know, running his mouth at the press saying, I was, you know, the Americans tried to kill me, and this is the part where the CIA is like, did we?
Yeah.
Is this us?
And so this is why Conklin's under pressure for the whole film and trying to shut Bourne down.
Because turns out it was us. It was the Americans. They sent someone to try and kill him.
Yeah. That leads to one of my favourite lines later on, but we'll get there when we get there. So Marie, outside, she's getting in her car. Jason Bourne escapes the consulate using some of his combat skills and also, a daring... this fire escape. Let's talk about this fire escape on the exit of this building, because he gets out to use it, and like normally a fire escape has a ladder that descends to the floor.
I think in some buildings it's like Yeah, I don't know.
They slide down or something still, yeah, though, you know, like, I don't retractable ladder. But this one just, like, it's either not good or broken.
Yeah, it's very strange.
But,
like, I think they also do a good job at showing he's not just a killing machine. He does have strategies. Like, the first thing he does is he grabs the radio for the people and a map off the wall.
Yeah,
like,
so he's not dumb.
I think they really lean into him as, like, a preparation kind of guy as well as an adaptation guy.
Yeah.
Like, he's often, like, several steps ahead. Like, he'll grab a map, you know, 5 minutes before he has to get in a car to, like, drive around in a big car chase or...
So Jason gets down. He does end up getting down to the bottom of the building and pops around into an alley where Marie's, like, getting into her car. And he's like, I'll give you $20,000 to drive me to Paris. And as we know, she's broke, so it's a hard offer to turn down.
She is a bit suspicious because he does that, like, oh, there's sirens. I'd better look away shiftily.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's like, even she would have picked up on, like, okay, you're a criminal.
She did. And she's like, but I like money.
How much do I like money versus how much do I like crime?
Also, that moment, though, is really strange because you only hear the siren as the cop car goes past the mouth of the alleyway. Like, you would have heard the siren coming. Yep. Like, why did it only just appear so that you could shiftily turn
this movie
away?
Didn't win an Oscar for sound editing. Okay. We'll say that much. So she does elect to drive him away. To Paris, and he wants to go to Paris because one of his passports has an address in Paris. And in the book, he really feels like he has to go to Paris.
Yeah, I think I like the movie, like, problem solving, like, well, here's my next clue.
Yeah.
Well, because in the book...
It's harder to convey, like, instinct.
Well, in the book also, he's been trained, like, he has these, like, mantras that go through his head without his... like, permission, and one of them is, like, I have to be in Paris, but because we find out later that Carlos's dealings are in Paris, like, everything goes through Paris, so, like, he's been told, like, I have to be in Paris at all, everything goes down in Paris, I have to be there, and it's because of the remnants of his past identity, like...
Yeah. Again, the movie has, like, the book has more time to explore that part of his psyche, but, like, I just prefer the expediency of the movie so much.
Definitely.
He gets to this address with Marie. It's just a lot like his old apartment building. It's pretty empty. It's a safe house, you know. Like,
it doesn't have much personality.
No.
And
he learns there. He kind of goes through some of his passports. He's trying to, like, redial the last number on his phone and learn more about, like, why he was here and what the address is.
So he redials and gets a...
Hotel,
where he's like, oh, I want to speak to someone who might be staying there. Jason Bourne, no. Oh, what about this other one, John Michael Caine, who's another passport? They're like, oh, no, I'm sorry, he's dead. His brother came and collected his things. He died 2 weeks ago. And so Jason's like, uh-oh, what's happening?
2 weeks ago, roughly the same time that I woke up.
Yeah. So that's another lead that he can... exploit.
Yes. And it's at this point that they are ambushed by the first agent, the bleach blonde haired Castell. Yeah. He's got them highlights.
Them frosted tips.
Frosted tips. The stealthiest of hairstyles for an assassin. This is mostly just a kind of a standard, like, one-on-one action fight scene, and Bourne wins pretty handily.
Yeah. They do like to show that he can fight with anything. In this case, he like defeats him with the aid of a ballpoint pen.
Very graphically too. I was not prepared for that.
In the next movie, he fights a guy with a knife with just, like, a rolled up magazine, which is pretty fun.
I need to go on and watch those.
It's good. Like, the series, it's a good series, good franchise. The Bourne Legacy goes in another direction.
But then they revert.
They revert back.
Jeremy Renner. You are Hawkeye forever.
Yeah. He was fine. Like, Jeremy Renner was fine. Like, the movie itself was okay. It was a perfectly serviceable action film.
Yeah.
It was a bit weird that it was put into the Bourne series, to be honest.
And so after being defeated, Marie discovers a bunch of papers in Castell's bag. And they're wanted papers for Jason and herself, who's now associated, like, she had the images of her from the CCTV. So she's now...
freaking out.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Which, she's having a real reason. Panic attack. Because it's like, you know, these photos were taken yesterday. How do they have these now?
Because they're, like, the CIA. Like,
yeah.
I did find it weird that she has such an issue with this. It's like, because secret agents, like...
But she doesn't know that yet.
No.
Yeah,
true. And anyway, while Castell, she's panicking,
Castell like leaps off the balcony and see dies.
Yeah, he kills himself. As he jumped out, I couldn't really tell what floor they're on. I'm like, is he running or is he dead? And then they like go downstairs and his like body's like collapsing. I'm like, oh, he's dead.
Yeah, it was very weird.
Yeah, Marie does elect to stay with Jason. And then we have a little cool little car chase through Paris. So they're at the train station. He does offer her, he's like, if you want out, this is it. You can go to the police. You tell them everything that's happened and they'll believe you.
He does say that, like, many times, which is a nice little addition to his character because he does seem like a self, you know, somewhat selfless, which is really different to the book because he's dragging her along at gunpoint for so long.
Yeah.
Before he's finally like, oh, she might die because of me. I guess I should help her.
Yeah.
Whereas at this point, he's like, every 5 minutes, you don't have to stay with me. You can go and escape.
Yeah, he's like, he's encouraging her to leave because he thinks it's dangerous. So again, much more sympathetic. Good Jason Bourne in this film. So we have this cool car chase through Paris. That's quite a well-received car chase, apparently.
Yeah.
Online. Well, I mean, for 2001 or 2002, I think it's probably...
I was saying this before to you. I think it does a really good job of showing Jason Bourne as a very skilled driver and agent because it's such a tiny, shitty little car. Not just because it's a small car, it can go through, like, alleyways and downstairs and stuff that a lot of the bigger cars can't. But I think it shows him to be a very skilled driver because a lot of car chases we see in other movies, they can... The only, you know, one of the reasons they succeed is because they're in the best car or they've got lots of, like, gadgets or it's all tricked out and it's, like, a fantastic car and they can handle it well and...
Yeah.
It works, but this is, like, one of the shittiest, like, a shitty little, like, Mini Cooper or something.
Yeah. And I like the chase because they, like, of the way it progresses, like, they slowly, like, take out one pursuer one by one, like, as they get caught in various obstacles and stuff. Yeah. So it is a fun little chase. They do end up escaping and they wind up, they just spend the night in a hotel under different aliases. And meanwhile...
This is where they bang?
Yeah, oh, yeah, and they fuck.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah. I find it a bit more a natural progression of their characters instead of the books just like...
Yeah, I think
you
I...
You saved me!
Although I like
now
it.
Now we're gonna bang! I love you now! Oh, I love you too! What?!
Although what? I do think, like, it's still, like, I do think it's more natural, I agree with you, in the film. I did still have to semi-justify, I'm like, because I'm like, she's in a clearly very vulnerable, like, panicky state. Like, it's clearly not, like, an ideal situation for banging.
No. I don't know.
I think both of them are a little subject to kind of, like, oh, there has to be some sort of romance thing in this, but...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely...
Does she come back in the other films?
Marie?
Yeah.
Yeah. At the start, I will spoil something for the next bit if no
yeah,
one
maybe,
cares.
Maybe, well, maybe don't, just
right,
in
I'll
case
spoil
there's
it
people
for you
listening.
Later.
Yeah.
I think I've already, all right, let me say, yes, she does.
Yeah.
And then you can cut out that bit later.
Sure. we then cut to a bit of, other happenings with the other groups around, Bourne. So Wombosi, is active and he, goes to the morgue to see the body of his assailant.
Yeah.
Or the guy who supposedly tried to assassinate him because they're like, oh, he died. The CIA told him, like, oh, he's dead. We got him.
Yeah.
And he visits him. He's like, nope, not him, you lying fuckers.
Also, because he's like, the guy who killed me was shot twice in the back, and this guy doesn't have, like...
The CIA are running
agents.
This, yeah.
It's like, guys, like, at least try.
Put some effort in, yeah.
Yeah.
And then he's like threatening the CIA. He's like, oh, I'm going to tell everything. It's, you know, my favorite line. He's like, if you're going to kill me, you better do it right.
You better kill me dead.
Yeah.
Better kill me the first time.
Yeah. And then he's killed.
Yeah.
Straight, like, literally 20 seconds after he says that by the professor who snipes him.
Yeah. So they at least...
do something, right?
Yeah, I think they...
That's what you get when you recruit Clive Owen.
Exactly.
Maybe this character is Clive Owen. Maybe he's secretly an assassin.
Sure.
I mean, there's no evidence to say that he's not.
Have you ever seen Clive Owen and an assassin in the same room together?
I have not. There but I've go. Never seen Clive Owen.
There's your proof.
So, yeah, Bourne is, like, at this point, has already started to connect the dots and is, like, planning on seeing Wombosi. But as soon as this, like, kind of all shakes down, he's like, oh, this was me.
Yeah.
As they, because as they read the newspaper article about his death, about Wombosi's death,
they said like there was an assassination attempt 2 weeks or however many weeks before that.
Yeah,
and it's like
finally
like
connects
on
the
his
dots.
Yacht.
Yeah, this is the one point where Marie does try to like to bail. After
I think it's good because she's like, hang on, you're actually a killer instead of just a confused man who
lost his
could
memory.
Kill.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fine. And then Jason's like, oh.
You can go, but.
You can go, but.
Picks up on the vein of the early part of the book, which is like, you can go, but not here.
Yeah, like, if you leave me now, they'll kill you.
That's the main difference between this and the early part of the book, mm-hmm. is like, if you leave now, we will both die. In the book, it's like, if you leave now, I will die.
Yeah.
So they need a safe house, so they go to Marie's stepbrother's house out in the countryside, which is a lovely little place.
Really. Yeah.
So they go to this place to escape, and then, like, basically, like, within an hour, like, her stepbrother gets home.
Yeah.
With his kids.
Yeah, they're like, she calls ahead, and she's like, oh, they're not home. I guess they must not, they must be away or something.
It's like, no, maybe they just went to the grocery shop
for her. So, like, they turn up and break into the house, and they go in and they're like, oh, this is, like, there are still Christmas lights on. We have to go.
Yeah, and they can't because he's home. And then he's like, oh, hi.
Hi. And I love her opening line of, like, I promise there's a good explanation for this.
It's like, that usually means there's not. Again, no one's very subtle or, like, good at keeping secrets in this film.
Well, I mean, what can you do when someone's caught you red-handed breaking into their house?
Yeah. I mean, you're lucky there's a relation of some sort. So, we do get a bit of, like, slow character stuff. Apparently, this is really funny. So, I was reading the research for this. This, like, apparently the writer was, like, sending through updates of the script, like, almost every day while they were filming. And then they wanted to basically cut this farmhouse scene almost entirely. And it took Matt Damon... and the writer,
director, I think, like they the director, campaigned
a lot to
for
keep
it.
This scene in the film because of the character work that's in it.
Yeah, I think.
And it did still go through a couple of rewrites even then, but they kept the scene, which I'm glad for because I think it does it really helps the pace of the film, just like slow it down before what is coming to be the final climax of this film.
And it definitely shows Jason Bourne's character, like Jason Bourne as the man discovering who he is. Like, he's a crisis of conscience. Like, I don't want to be.
And they
film
that so well because, like, even in the even in this one, like, it's kind of almost a throwaway shot, but it's him just like as Marie and Eamon are looking out over like their yard, and they see it, and you just get this one shot of like Bourne just like pushing one of the kids on the swing, and he like seems so out of place. He's like, "What do I do?"
It reminded me of the scene in Terminator 2 when I don't know if you remember, but Sarah Connor's, like, watching The Terminator with John Connor, like, the child. Like, I don't think they're on a swing, but, like, I think John Connor's trying to teach him how to high-five or something in the distance. And, like, just The Terminator, like, I don't understand, but I'm trying to be your dad. I am your dad now.
Dad robot.
Yeah, it's very interesting. But... and then later on, creepily, he's watching the children sleep, which I think Marie's a bit on the ball. She's like, what are you doing? You can't just stand here over... You can't just be a strange man in my stepbrother's house watching his children sleep in their rooms.
But
you
this
crazy
is,
person.
This is to set up, like, I think this contributes to how he reacts later
on
to the flashbacks.
Like, it's a very good scene.
Yeah.
It's just
weird at the time.
It just seems a bit weird, but it's like noted in the movie as well.
Bourne is clued into the professor's arrival, and he's like, "You all got to go to the basement," and then he has a shootout with the professor.
Yeah.
And it's a cool little, like, it's a nice little suspenseful action scene here.
Yeah,
as they're going through the reeds and the forest. It's I like the tactics of it as well. It's like a very like slower but well played scene.
Yeah,
it's, like shotgun v sniper.
It's not like a huge shoot 'em up, riddle everyone with bullets. It's
and again, it does show his resourcefulness, like how he uses the environment to his advantage and things like that. So he does shoot the professor twice, like once in each shoulder or side, basically. And it's their fatal wounds, but it, you know, it takes him a while to get out. So he does a reveal to Bourne. He's like, "Oh, you're Treadstone as well. Like, which city are you from?"
Yeah.
Which clues you into, oh, okay, there are Treadstone agents based in certain cities.
And he's like,
cities.
You know, how many other people are here? And he's like, "No one,
about?
I'm alone. We always work alone."
Yeah.
And so and it's that nice moment of like, do you get the headaches as well? Like, look what they make us do. Look what has become of us.
Yeah.
Which is a
kind Was of, it worth it?
Yeah, like a nice kind of...
The assassin's deathbed wandering.
Yeah, and like kind of brotherhood sort of meeting together.
I should have stuck to piano tutoring. And so then he dies.
Yeah.
And Bourne then sends Marie and Eamon away so they can be safe. He finally like convinces him, like, okay, this time you got to go. I'm literally going to do some gunfights.
Yeah.
And then he starts to track Treadstone.
Yeah.
So he uses the cell phone of the professor to give Conklin a call.
Yeah.
And he's like, "You come and meet me on a bridge in Paris and we'll chat."
Yeah, come alone.
Yeah, yeah, he gives him very specific instructions.
I swear, like, these
Does anyone, like,
films, firstly, I don't think he can reasonably assume that they will come alone, but also
but I don't think
they're never alone. Like, tell
this guy, the CIA guy, to come alone. He'll definitely follow your instructions.
But also, like, they act surprised when Bourne is like, "I told you to come alone. I saw the guy." Like, of course he will. He knows where they'll be. And this happens several times across the series.
Yeah.
He'll be like, "This person needs to come alone. Let's send 5 snipers and 7 undercover guards who give themselves away." Like, they have, like, not just little earbud, like, transmitters, but they have the sort of like Secret Service earbuds with like the huge telephone cords that lead in. And then when they're speaking to each other, they're like grabbing their coat collar to speak into it as if. Oh,
2001. Your technology was crap.
But even, I'm sure it wasn't that crap.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure it's just movie, like.
Yeah, you gotta have that visual.
Oh, it's so dumb. It's what I really liked about the first Daniel Craig Bond movie, like the opening scene. It's got Bond and then some other rookie agent or shit agent who's like talking to him when he's like touching his ear to talk to him. And Bond has to be like, "Stop touching your fucking ear. You're giving it away." And spoilers, he gave them away because he kept touching his ear while he was speaking to him over comms.
Bourne does turn this situation to his advantage because he finds the van that they brought to, like, the surveillance van and puts a tracker on it so he knows where the safe house is.
Yeah. I have a feeling that was kind of the plan all along.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, you know, Bourne knows they're not coming alone. You know, somewhere along the line they've shown up here. And so he does track them to the safe house. He busts in. I like this scene, like, as... Because, you know, Conklin, like, triples the security and everything and puts all the guards out front. And Bourne, like, sets off all the car alarms. I do find it funny that he's like, that they're like they have no vertical vision apparently during this point in time as he like scales the wall in plain like sight of everyone. It's just another fun, silly moment. But he gets inside and then like you see the electricity shutting down like room by room and then like Mindy's like,
"Oh,
that's this room.
He's here.
Yeah, that's this window." And then bang, he's on them in a flash. And I do like this confrontation because I was assuming, oh, you know, he'll push Conklin up against the wall and threaten him and everything. But Conklin, like, he's face to face with, like, this guy he knows is a trained assassin and, like, doesn't flinch. Like, in fact, he actually takes the aggressive.
He, like, slaps his hand away.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting because, like, he's been trying to kill him the whole time because he seems to have gone rogue. But I do get the sense of, like, the history between them. Like, because he doesn't know that he's lost his memory. So he thinks he's just, like, speaking to him as he would his co-worker or his subordinate, I guess. And so he's, you know, being like, you know, what are you doing, you idiot? Like, you know, we sent you to kill this guy. And I love it's like, you wanted me to kill him? I think you were referencing this before. It's like, I don't pay you to kill. If I wanted someone to just kill, I'd send Nikki in.
Yeah.
And Nikki's over there like,
yeah, whatever.
Ouch. You know, I pay you to be invisible. You're supposed to make it look like an inside job.
And then he triggers his memory because he's like, oh, you planned the Wombo. Yeah. You told him to be on the yacht.
This was your job.
Yeah. And then you flash into his memory and you realize that he couldn't kill Wombosi because Wombosi's kids were in the room. Yeah, like, literally so sleeping on top of him.
Had a bit of a crisis of conscience.
Yeah, which does push the, you know, he is a good human being at heart thing.
Yeah, so
which is vital for the character, you know. Like.
Yeah, so he ended up, that's why he flubbed the job and got shot.
Yeah, like, we haven't mentioned the book in a while because this is diverging so wildly from the plot where, like, that, you know, you're getting into the CIA and the, and Castro all
yeah
doing their things. Like, Castro was the one, the operation that he flashes back to and failed.
Yeah.
On board the yacht and everything in the book, obviously. But Bourne, you know, flashing back to this, and because, you know, he's changed his mind, like, sticks to it, he says, "You're right, I'm out, see ya.
Yeah, I don't want to kill anymore. Yeah,
don't follow me."
But it turns out he's triggered, like, a beacon or something, or a... they don't really say what it is, whether it's recording him or if it's just, like, a call back into the room.
Yeah, I assume, it's a comms device, so yeah. There's someone else is listening, and he's like, some okay, screw flashing. This, and just knocks him out.
Yeah.
Which is very satisfying.
Yeah.
He is kind of wounded escaping the building because he does have to fight a lot of guys, and he
and, like,
in this big stairwell
jumps over the balcony of the staircase and, like, falls several stories.
It's a very cool, like, moment though in the whole thing. Like, this, I do like the fight in the staircase, and then, like, he shoots the last guy shoots coming some up the guy staircase as on the way
he's
down.
Going down, and then, like, he's used the body of a different guy to
yeah as break a meat his shield. Fall. Yeah, but obviously that big and. I'm glad they do. He is still in, like, a lot of pain. It's not, he's not just like, oh, I landed on this guy, I'm fine.
They do a good job in the next movie as well. Like, he gets quite badly injured and he's limping for pretty much the rest of the movie. Not that, you know, it stops him from kicking ass, but they do carry through that continuity pretty well.
Yep. The Conklin, like, as he's awakening, like, tells me, he's like, oh, shut this place down, we'll move the safe house out of here and everything. Mm. And as he's exiting the building, like, you get this dual shot, and I could tell what's happening. Like, it's not very subtle at all. Like,
yeah,
you can tell what's happening. There's shots of Mannheim, the third assassin,
waiting in a car for a, like, limping man
in a trench coat and stuff. And
and I think we're supposed to assume this is Bourne as he's
exiting the building,
running away finally. But it turns out it's not. It's Conklin, and the final assassin shoots him
dead. On Abbott's orders.
Yeah, so it looks like Conklin has failed a few too many times. It's a shit show. They want to save the embarrassment for the department. And we find out in the next movie that there might be more to that as well.
Yeah.
But as far as we know here, it's because of his incompetence and his sort of vendetta and his failed...
Yeah, it's all caught up with him, basically. Yeah. It's coming back. We get a scene of, like, Abbott facing the CIA board or whatever. And he's like, oh, yeah, Treadstone was a failure. It didn't really work out the way it was planned. Yeah. But Operation Blackbriar will be much more successful.
Yeah.
Which is basically, I heard in my head as they were saying, and I'm like, an Operation Sequel will be very, return many investments for us.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is.
And then in our last final satisfying scene, we see Marie operating this scooter shop in Greece. It's a very nice little scene. And Bourne walks in. I do like this trope of, you know, like the person walking in and not noticing, and then like, oh, you're here.
Yeah.
And they have a nice little tender moment as they reunite.
Yeah. And cue the Moby music.
Yeah, which, man. Speaking of 2001.
It's a good track, Extreme Ways by Moby, and it becomes the...
kind of the song at the end of every film. And yeah, I mean, well, I was it's like, really I, good
I
to like.
Pick, I couldn't pick the title of the song, but I was like, oh, I recognize
it, it
this.
It draws them all together very well. Yeah. I really enjoy it.
Yeah. And that's the end of the film.
We did it.
We sure did. So recommendations, say, for The Bourne Identity, the book, and The Bourne Identity, the movie.
I don't read a lot of spy thrillers, so I don't know where it is on the scale of a good spy thriller book, but I assume there are probably better books that do the same kind of thing. It's not bad, and obviously it was, you know, spawned sequels, and then even after his death there were more sequels, so I think it's probably a thumbs down, just because I didn't really enjoy it that much. It got better as it continued, like from about halfway, as they revealed the other twists. I thought it got a bit more interesting, but overall it was pretty average for me.
Yep.
Thumbs up for the book, for the film, sorry. Thumbs up for the film. It was great, and I enjoy the franchise a lot.
Cool. Yeah, I don't think the book's bad. It is, like, dated now, especially when you're reading it. You can tell that it was written a good almost 40 years ago now. And I don't think it's not badly written.
Except the dialogue is. I can't see how the dialogue can be seen as well written. Because they just...
For a spy thriller...
Robotic.
As an action spy thriller, it's fine. It's serviceable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sold millions of copies. It can't be a bad book.
It's not bad.
But I don't think it's worth. Yeah, and I think it was long. Like it did at the pacing at the start. It does take you a while to sink into it. And I just can't really recommend it because again, for the same reason, it's not. I don't think it's that it's a terrible book. It's just that I didn't really enjoy it a whole lot.
It's a good jumping off point, which is why I think the movies do so well.
Yeah.
Because it's a really fun, intriguing concept, which you know.
And I will recommend the movie, absolutely. I think it was a very good film. It's the first time I've seen it. Was this. And I'm glad. And I'll probably go and watch the next ones too, because I think Matt Damon's, he makes this character very entertaining.
Yeah.
Like that a lot. What else are you into outside of Super Spies?
I tried to think of a single thing to recommend other than Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Well, let's talk about it, because that was my thing as well.
Because I knew that everyone wants to recommend that these days, but it's the only other thing I'd been consuming was the Spider-Man video game. Liam already talked about that, so it's just great. It's a good movie. Everyone should see it.
Yeah, I as I came out of it, because I've seen it twice, I'm like comparing in my head because it's the thing you do at the end of the year. You know, you make your top 10 list and stuff like that. I'm like, I think this might not even, it might even be the best, like, not even just the best superhero film of the year. And that's in the year where Infinity War and Black Panther came out. It might be the best film that
I
saw this year. It's just like so, and it's incredible that in like, and it's thanks to what's come before it, obviously, but that you can just put, this is the first film in this installment. And obviously everyone knows the Spider-Man story, but not a lot of people know the Miles Morales Spider-Man story, and this introduces a multiverse thing, which is a very comic-y gimmick.
And it does it really well. Like, it could have been just a clusterfuck of confusion.
It's not just that they go for it, but that they nail it. Yeah, they crush it.
It's really good.
So
everyone should watch it, and if you haven't watched it by now, you're a dum-dum.
Yeah, go watch it, absolutely. It's honestly, it's such a good film. I think I probably enjoyed it more than I enjoyed any other film this year.
And you get
and
to
I
hear,
loved Infinity War.
And you get to hear Nick Cage
saying, not work out a Rubik's Cube.
Saying such gems of, what is it? I light a match and let it burn down to my fingers just so I can feel something, anything.
I don't know what this cube is, but I will. Is this purple?
Oh my gosh.
Excellent. John Mulaney.
Oh, he's the best. Everyone's really great.
Yeah, they nail it. Next time, we may or may not be doing I Love You, Philip Morris. Because apparently the book's out of print, which is strange. So if we can't get a hold of that, we might switch our plans up. We might just have to call this one on the fly. So we'll let you know. You can find and contact us at wereadthebook@gmail.com, on Twitter at readthebookpod, and on Facebook at the We Read the Book discussion group, where we will, of course, be asking for your secret agent code names this week.
Yes.
And don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes, so we'll appear fortnightly in your feed. We released our episode Christmas Day this year, so, you know, yeah. We're on the ball.
Yeah.
The Polar Express, go back and listen to that one if you haven't, if you're still feeling the need for a bit of Christmas spirit.
Yeah.
Can, listen to me and Lois debate whether or not it's the creepiest CGI ever.
Yeah.
And thanks to the Dada Weatherman for the use of our theme song, Human Light. It's a killer track. That's pretty much the end for this week. So, we'll see you in a couple of weeks' time. For now, I've been the collector, Adam Heap.
I've been the operator, Sally McMaster.
We'll see you next time. Or not if we kill you. Which we wouldn't, because we need listeners on this show.
Whoa.
Bye.
Whoa. You're my human light. Oh, 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 'cause you're my human light.
I really hope it's an actual chimpanzee, like a highly trained chimpanzee, because I want to see that film. The Born Chimpanzee.
Oh my god.